Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to Spotcast Season 7, Episode 5. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Jonathan Kuhlein in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids.
We also have Jaime Lopez Jr. on the line in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
We'll just leave it at that. quick fact check. These aren't really fact checks, but we've talked about this before. We've talked about UNIT on Doctor Who. I was looking up some Doctor Who stuff because I started watching some of the shows and some of the older shows. And it stands for United Nations Intelligence Task Force. So, which is fine until Trump gets into office again. And then just a little bit of factoid, Tom Baker is the longest serving doctor at 7 seasons, surprisingly.
Hmm.
Jonathan and I were talking last week about the prices of the Doctor Who's in the after show, right?
Mm-hmm.
And surprisingly, Tom Baker is one of the only Doctor seasons that you can't just get all the seasons. You can only buy parts of them, right? And they're still expensive, right? So we figured it's probably a BBC, you know, some sort of deal or whatever they have with the BBC. Because you can buy, you know, the entire Peter Capaldi, you buy the entire, Matt Smith, you can buy the entire David Tennant, right? And, you know, Jodie Whittaker is broken up, obviously, because it's sort of newer. But anyway, just a little bit of Doctor Who fact check for everybody out there.
And he is the fourth Doctor, according to the AI overview on the Googles.
Okay. Yeah, he's the fourth one. Yeah,
it was gonna be my question. I didn't know which one he was.
Yeah, it was kind of funny, you know, because I used to get a little confused because when I was a kid, you know, I was watching it and I was like, you know, like a young teen. Sometimes it would be Tom Baker, sometimes it'd be John Pertwee, right? And there was never sort of any sort of like I didn't make the connection that, you know, that it was like. So Pertwee was the third Doctor, and then Tom Baker took over. So Tom Baker was the Doctor I knew for the longest time, and then I stopped. And then David Tennant's father-in-law, whose name is, I can't remember his name, but he's the guy from All Creatures Great and Small. He was the fifth Doctor. What's his name? Anyway.
I sent the next week's fact check.
No, we'll do it right now. John Davidson, I think.
Mm.
Is it John Davidson?
Peter Davidson, Peter not Davidson, Davidson. Davidson.
Yeah, Peter Davidson. Yeah, yeah. He's actually because David Tennant married his daughter,
mm-hmm.
and so it's weird when the two of them go to dinner and people see them out there, right? Davidson, yeah, Davidson. You're right. Yeah. Anyway, so that's the Doctor Who for today. So we'll move on to the headlines, and Jonathan's up first.
Yeah, I thought I'd start off with some Trek stuff since, you know, Trek podcast. There is a cool auction that is going to be happening. We talk about these from time to time of Star Trek goodies. Some of these are bigger and better than others, but this one really caught my eye because of some of the really neat props that are available here. There is a set of original long-lost Star Trek, the original series communicator and phaser set that is estimated to go for $100,000 to $200,000 US. This is, they're calling it the Bid Long and Prosper auction and exhibition. We'll have the link in the show notes. There's a little video where they showed some of the original props to William Shatner, and they make the announcement about this auction, and it's pretty cool. It's coming up. The auction is taking place on the 9th of November at the Astor in Los Angeles. And anyway, it's just crazy. Some of the stuff they got here, like a huge console piece from the original Star Trek series, including, you know, like all the sort of retro future gadgets. This one is my favorite, is the original Deep Space Nine space station miniature. So that's one of the like original shooting props for that. Is a really cool prop. All kinds of costumes. They've got Picard costumes and Kirk costumes. They've got, you know, all kinds of gadgets. That, like the Rurapente goggles from Star Trek VI are very cool. But anyway.
Iman wore those, I think, right?
Yeah, a couple different times they show those. But anyway, there's a link in here to juliansauctions.com. And there's just, there's a ton of stuff that's available if you're a Star Trek fan who's apparently got a lot of money, because this stuff is not cheap, but really neat sort of opportunity to have a piece of Trek history if you've got the scratch.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Just saying that they think the current bid for the Deep Space Nine model is only 35,000 US. So I mean, that's a conversation.
It's a bargain.
Is that really bargain, yeah. that's really Deep Space Nine right there in my living room?
Yeah, my coffee table top bottom. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or just, you know, strap the console of the Star Trek Enterprise, Starship Enterprise, into your you know.
It can be your standing desk, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Anyway. Cool little trip down memory lane / oh my god, I can't believe how expensive that is set.
It'd be cool to have all those light up buttons that they used to have on the original Star Trek thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing that I think might be missing from some of these things. I want it to have sound effects. I want it to have, you know, flashing lights. I want it to be as authentic to the moment as it can be. We've got a bunch of trailers this week that sort of popped up. Some we were expecting, some maybe not. The one that really caught my eye was the first trailer for Electric State, which is the new upcoming Anthony and Joe Russo movie. So these are the guys who, of course, are the filmmakers behind Avengers Endgame, Infinity War, Captain America, Civil War, and Winter Soldier. They also did The Gray Man. So they've reteamed with Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely, the writers for some of those projects, and have done this original science fiction movie that's coming out on Netflix. It is coming out in, say, I should have written that down. March 14th is when it's coming out. Didn't know, like, I knew it was coming. I knew they were working on this, but I must admit I didn't know much about it until I saw the trailer. The premise is basically a young girl played by Millie Bobby Brown, who continues to be a Netflix star in her own right, is basically approached about trying to reunite her family along with the help of a robot in a society where there has obviously been some conflict between robots and humans. Other stars in this, Chris Pratt, Kehi Kwan, Stanley Tucci, Giancarlo Esposito shows up at one point, and his face pops up on the screen at some point. And then there's lots of different famous people doing the voices of the robots that don't seem to have like humanoid faces. They seem a little more sort of cartoonish. This is a real, like, it's obviously CGI, but it's not sort of.
Is it based on anything or just?
It seems like it's an original project. So,
okay.
Yeah. But people doing the voices for some of the robots, Woody Harrelson, Alan Tudyk, Brian Cox, Jenny Slate, Anthony Mackie, Billy Bob Thornton, Jason Alexander. So it's pretty star-studded and a pretty good pedigree from the writing and directing standpoint. So I guess my question for both of you is, what'd you think of the trailer?
It looks interesting, like kind of something I would watch naturally, right? So,
Yeah, I mean, the designs sometimes feel a little bit like they were inspired by Five Nights at Freddy's. Like they're meant to be a little unsettling, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And It's coming out on Netflix, and I did watch Atlas, which feels similar-ish, like a nice Sunday afternoon sort of thing. So.
Atlas? What's that?
That was the, I believe that was the name of the J-Lo one where she's in the big robot.
Oh, that robot one. Okay.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it's funny because I saw this trailer and I was like, well, this looks pretty epic as far as like the way that it's shot, the way it's scoped. I was like actually a little disappointed that it was a Netflix movie and not a theatrical movie. Now, Netflix does often put some of their movies in for short runs in the theater too, so you might have the opportunity, but it looks pretty grand in its scope. It did kind of remind me a little bit of Ready Player One. Just that's the scope of it, the way that it was sort of approaching things, just like big crowds, big, you know, action, like it just the way that it was shot felt very sort of epic scope, which is, I mean, the Russo brothers are masters. So sure.
Well, that's why it feels familiar, right? Because it's got that sort of.
Yeah.
I thought maybe it was like it was a comic book or something that's come to life or whatever. But
yeah, again, I have not heard of this being from anything else. I think this is an original project. I think the idea is that, you know, Netflix wants to produce strong original content and keep bringing users in. So here we go. Next trailer we got was Silo season 2, which we knew when it was coming. We knew it's coming in November, and we knew that, you know, obviously it was going to sort of pick the story up where it left off with Juliet, you know, trying to figure out where to go next. And, you know, I'm not going to spoil too much of season 1 if you haven't seen it, but it, yeah, I mean, Rebecca Ferguson's back, and, you know, it's definitely a very sort of, it feels, again, kind of like a propulsive kind of trailer, and like, you know, obviously the first season sort of built up to a huge sort of crescendo as far as the events. This, you know, seems like it picks up right where we left off, and it feels like it's a pretty... pretty cool trailer as far as its intensity level. It seems like it's like ratcheted up. There's a lot of action. There's a lot of intensity. It's kind of creepy at spots. I thought this was really cool. It made me even more eager, and I'm very eager for this series. What'd you guys like of this one?
Yeah, I mean, it continues, like I said, the sort of story. I mean, the whole subtext of the first season is sort of like that, you know, they're living in this silo. They've been there for a while, and people are raising questions about whether, you know, the Earth has recovered or not from the nuclear holocaust that these people are escaping from, right? Mm-hmm. And kind of similar to that other one we just watched a few months ago with Walt Goggins in it. You know, not to spoil it, you know, things aren't what they seem is the general theme. And there was some interesting bits and pieces that I tried to put together in my head what they might represent, you know, for our hero and for the people in the silo, right? So
yeah,
be interesting to see.
I mean, did you watch the first season of Silo?
I did. I'm looking forward to this season. It's November 15th.
Yeah. Yeah, I was quite taken with the first series, and I enjoyed it so much that I was talking to people about it, and they were like, oh my god, you have to read the book. It's actually really well written. So I read Wool, which is the first book, which essentially covers the events of the first two seasons of Silo. There are two other books and a bunch of short stories and different sort of bits and pieces that they could do to do more. But this kind of... this season should wrap up a lot of sort of the storyline that they've been building. I am really curious to know if they're going to do more, and I'm really curious to sort of see how aligned the events of the book and the lines of the show are, because the first season was pretty close. Definitely there was some different, you know, tacks taken and stuff like that, but I really dug it, and I thought Rebecca Ferguson, you know, I had seen her in a few different things. I'm not a Mission Impossible fan, obviously, so I hadn't seen her in that. I know people have said she's quite good in those, but I saw her in that. Obviously, she's become a bit of a star doing those Dune movies, but she really knocked my socks off in the first season of this. She's really quite captivating performer, and I'm super hyped to see the rest of this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it too.
Yeah. Last trailer was Wallace and Gromit: Vengeance Most Foul. So we've gotten, I think, a little 20-second teaser when they announced this was coming. This one, still not super long. It's only about 50 seconds, something like that. But just a little more of, you know, a little bit of plot reveal. You know, it looks like, obviously, someone has framed Wallace for something, and, you know, the crowds have turned against him, and, you know, we obviously know who it is because we've seen the first trailer and we see a little bit more in this trailer. But this looks great, and most importantly, we got a date reveal as part of this trailer, so we know that it's coming during the holiday season. January 3rd, 2025 is the release date on Netflix. So I love Wallace and Gromit. They're one of my favorite things. I know that's a shared love through our whole family. And, you know, Aardman is just such a fun studio. They have such love and respect for the craft of clay animation. And, you know, it just looks like it could be fantastic. And I love that they're kind of, you know, leaning into the nostalgia of it a little bit in telling this story. So, yeah, I'm way in. Did you guys enjoy this trailer as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, like, obviously, I have all the movies and the only one I've never seen is the Shaun the Sheep one, but I'm a huge fan of the chicken.
Yes. Yes, the chicken.
Yeah. Don't want to spoil it for anybody. No.
I mean, are you an Aardman fan?
Yeah, I've definitely watched these. I'm trying to think if the last one was the UFO werewolf one. I forget what it was called. Night of the Werewolf.
That was definitely. And then they did a pirate one
too. They did the pirates. But this is the first time back with Wallace and Gromit in almost 20 years. Like, it's been quite a while since we got Curse of the Were-Rabbit, right? And there was, like, the cracking contraptions, and there's been a few little bits and pieces, but this is the first feature we've seen in quite a long time. So, yeah. We did
Poor get... Gromit.
Yeah, we did get a trailer of sorts for the Invincible Season 3 reveal that came this week. I don't know if you guys saw the trailer that was attached to that. It was kind of tongue in cheek. It was basically like, what's taking you so long in getting a trailer out as played by the characters in the show? And it was basically a long trailer for the fact that there's going to be a season. It's coming soon. They announced that Invincible Season 3 is coming on February 6th. They announced there isn't going to be a mid-season break like they did last time. Obviously, they did the break because of the writer's strike. They were kind of trying to stretch the content out a little bit. Most fans, myself included, did not think that was a great idea because it kind of broke up the flow of the season. So excited to know that it's coming back, excited to know that it's going to be just a run again. Although it is Amazon, so chances are it'll be sort of a 3+5 or whatever. So you'll get the first sort of chunk of episodes and then you'll get more. But yeah, love Invincible, one of my favorite series. It's a very respectful to the comic books. Obviously, it is made by a lot of the people involved. So, yeah, dying to see what they get up into season three. If it follows the comics storyline, they're going to get into some really, really interesting stuff. It's a very cool comic in the way that it takes place in a sort of a real time. We meet Mark at a certain age, and unlike a lot of comics where people kind of more or less stay the same age and different writers take cracks at it, this is sort of a whole story that sort of starts when he's a teenager and works right through his sort of 10 years of his life. So yeah, really neat to see what they do with season three.
But like the no mid-season break that they emphasized.
Yeah. Like I said, I think they took a lot of heat on that. I think there was a lot of people who were like, hey, what's the deal with this? I think a lot of things this year got a little disrupted by last year's actors and writers strikes and the Directors Guild delays. And so, yeah, I think everybody kind of is a little off this year. So hopefully next year this is emblematic of the kind of stuff we can expect, because it's been a great series so far.
Well, that's a great segue to my next article.
It was sort of, I
stumbled across this article, the Vulture was reading something else and saw this in the corner of my eye, and it's like, why is it taking so long for these, you know, series to come? Why is season two of Severance taking almost 2 years and Euphoria season three and et cetera, et cetera? And it starts with the premise of like, do you remember that show called Stranger Things? Mm-hmm. You know, do you remember what happened in the last season? Do you even remember when the last season was on, kind of thing? And it's a three-part essay on why it takes so long for these shows to go, notwithstanding writer strikes and actor strikes and all that kind of stuff. But it's like the premise is that movie studios don't know how to make television, right? Because they don't know how to churn out, 22 episodes in rapid succession, So that's one thing. And then the another point is about the epics, like, the Dragon movies and the Power of the Ring movies and that kind of stuff. They're epic productions. So, those things take time to sort of, to put together and to, make them look just the way they want them to look. Right. So I forget what the third one is that streaming doesn't, afford itself to the kind of way that broadcast television used to work. Right. So, and we've talked about the problem with streaming where, I don't like streaming when you get like all six episodes all at once kind of thing. Even like Slow Horses, I just finished that. I don't know if you finished it, but that seemed like British shows always seem short to me because they're only six episodes long, right? Sort of thing. But I don't like the Netflix model of dropping all the episodes all at once because I'll be tempted to sit. It's like a bag of chips. You can't just eat one, kind of thing.
Well, so, and it also, for stuff like I think we enjoy the opportunity to spend a little time digesting. Obviously, we've based our podcast on having these discussions and sort of dissecting, where things are going and how we're enjoying it. And when they do those big drops, I remember that with Stranger Things. I remember that with a few of these series where you're like, you almost feel like you have to run at it because otherwise you're afraid you're going to get spoiled or you're afraid that you're going to, have the FOMO, obviously, that happens with some of these shows. So it can be, it can be a little disruptive that way.
Well, I understand the idea of dropping two or three episodes, especially on Apple TV, where they want to introduce a new thing. But like, I'm watching that Shrinking show. That's the one with Harrison Ford and
Jason Segel. Yeah.
Jason Segel, and they dropped the first two episodes, I needed the first episode to kind of catch up on where the story went at the end of the last season, but they didn't need to drop both. I did watch them, not at the same time, I took a day between, but I did watch them. I prefer to have the sort of stuff come out one at a time. That said, if they gave me all six episodes of Slow Horses, I would watch them all at once, right? Sort of thing. Like, there's a few shows that, like, as soon as it comes on or as soon as the clock flips over, like, obviously we're watching Agatha at, at 9 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesdays because that's when it becomes available. I mean, I don't know about you, John, but that's when I do, right? Mm-hmm. And the same thing with whatever we're watching on Thursday, we have to sort of watch it before the podcast, right? But, it's kind of like you want to get this stuff going as soon as possible, but then again, like you said, the just digesting and living with something and thinking and mulling it over and, not all of us can figure out the plot and, halfway through a series, John,
So. Well, come on. What's the phrase we're working on? Do better. Do better.
Do better. Yeah. Well, it's funny. It's funny that I just, by the way, just a quick follow up on the Amelie saga is the disc did arrive this afternoon. So I started watching the first half of it. I'm watching this one plot point in the middle of the movie. And I'm thinking now that I've seen the story before, I saw the movie in the theater and I've seen it. I had it on DVD. So I remember this one particular plot point, but I'm looking at it going, what if Jonathan could figure that out at this point in the movie, like 50 minutes in on a 2-hour movie, right? So it'd be interesting to see, like, when I lend you the disc and you sit down and watch it, if you...
challenges, fans, anyone else.
Only because there's a couple of mysteries in this movie that you need to sort of solve, and you don't have to solve, but they get solved by the end of the movie, it's sort of interesting. There's one sort of one that's a real head scratcher at first, right? But I bet you could figure it out. Anyway, so the big wait I'm still waiting for Severance. Severance is taking a long time to come out, right? So, I don't know what the deal is, right? So,
well, it definitely occurred to me when we were talking about Slow Horses, which just wrapped up last week. Slow Horses is putting out one 6-episode season every fall and has for the past 4 years. And they've already been renewed for seasons 5 and 6. I expect we'll do this for a while still, because it is really starting to find
there,
its...
There are eight novels currently.
Yeah. So far, yeah. So it's funny because I was saying to someone like, oh, I really, you know, I came to it a little later. I said, you know, my friend Tim's a huge fan and really got, you know, was advocating for it. And I said, you know, the best part of it is that it drops every year, 6 episodes in the fall. And I was like, that is the stupidest thing I've ever said, because of course they can produce 6 episodes of television every year. They used to produce 25, 28 episodes. Now, again, here we're talking about quality over quantity, and I'm fine with that. But of course, studios can do that. But it depends on what we're dealing with. You know, this show is very practical. I'm sure that there are obviously, you know, the fight choreography, the action scenes and stuff do take a fair bit of time to shoot and do well. But it's not, you know, we're not talking about Deadpool and Wolverine or Avengers, where half the movie is an animated movie. Essentially, it's CGI'd so much. So obviously all that post-production takes so much time, but there are a lot of shows that could be done faster. We have just become accustomed to less and less often. And I don't mind that if it's Game of Thrones, and I don't mind that if it's Star Trek, and I don't mind that if it's, you know, Star Wars or Disney, Disney Plus Marvel series or whatever, as long as it's something that requires that. What I find a little bit difficult to take is when it is stuff like, you know, if they were like, yeah, it takes us 2 years to do a season of Slow Horses. I'm like, why?
You know, especially when they at the end of the episode of 6, they drop a trailer for the next season. I'm like, wait a minute.
Well, Slow Horses, they are so committed to it that they're basically writing 2 seasons ahead and almost finishing a season ahead as they finish. Like they're that far ahead, which is fantastic, because it means, you know, obviously they're committed to it. And as a fan, you want that commitment if you love the show. But I mean, one of the things that was listed in the article from Vulture is Euphoria. You know, Euphoria was one of those, are they going to do a third season? Are they not going to do a third season? There's been, you know, people have said like, I won't come back even if they do. Unfortunately,
Zendaya in that one.
Well, unfortunately, yeah, it is. Well, unfortunately, one of the actors that was on the first 2 seasons died in real life. So that was a big blow. But more than anything, it's that was a hit show for HBO. Half the people on the show have gone on to become big Hollywood stars. Zendaya. as soon as I say that, of course, I have to remember who's in it. It's got like all these people who have become, famous, Hollywood people, and they get cast for things. So it's Zendaya, Sydney Sweeney, Hunter Schafer, and Jacob Elordi have all gone on to become like pretty big, you know, people in their other things. Even characters like Storm Reid was in season 1. Barbie Ferreira has gone on to have a pretty good career. There's a lot of people on that show that have gone on to other things. And of course, once you have that success, it gets really hard to get everybody together too, because unless you have these people signed to you can't work on anything else contract, they're going to go and find all the work they can. But in some cases, it really is disruptive. Like Euphoria was a show based on these kids who were in this community, and most of them were in high school together. By the time they get this third season together, it's going to have been like 5-6 years by the time they shoot it. So there's going to have to be a significant time jump. So yeah, like I say, it can be a real kind of challenge to have these things, with such long gaps in between them, unless it's deliberate. I mean, Dune, theoretically, between Dune 2 and Dune 3, it's supposed to be almost a decade. So if they can't get Zendaya and Timothy Chalamet and Rebecca Ferguson and all these people back to do that for 10 years, it'll actually make sense. But yeah, in a lot of these circumstances, it's funny how we go from being that network television model of, you know, yeah, seasons start in September, we watch them, they go up until about Christmas, they take a break, they come back in January, we watch them for a few more months, it ends in the spring, we take the summers off. But we were used to getting, you know, a long time ago, it was 28, 30 episodes, then it was down to 24, down to 22. We kind of just have been whittled down to like, expect less episodes, expect longer gaps in between, and we just kind of take it. I mean, do you have any of these that stick in your memory of long waits?
Yeah, I think Stranger Things was one of the rougher ones. And you're like, well, okay, you know, you've got a lot of CGI and stuff, cool, but like Bridgerton shouldn't take very long at all. Severance shouldn't take very long at all, you know, by comparison. Just some of these shows, you're like, bro, it's just people in like suits. What is taking so long? You're just reuse the, you know, are you making fresh new suits? What are you doing exactly that's taking so long?
They want extra.
But Suits was an example. Suits was an example in the article where they said they were able to bang those out pretty quickly, right?
Yeah.
But then I was going to ask you guys, like, when they did, you know, the Next Generation or Deep Space Nine, or, you know, they and Voyager, were they not as complex in terms of special effects? Obviously, they didn't have dragons flying around and stuff like that.
But. Yeah, and they also they could recycle a lot, right? You basically, I think it was Kevin Smith at one point, one of the things that you and I saw with Kevin live, he said, you know, the old model of television was do 3, 3, and 3. It was 3 great episodes, 3 good episodes, and 3 who cares episodes to do a season of network television or syndicated television. Now I appreciate that they're not just giving us like, hey, we have to make a new episode for this week. Here's a new episode for this week. Cause I do think that affects the quality overall. Like, you can't really find a show from the 90s, early 2000s, 80s, where every single episode of every single season is fantastic. Cause it's just hard. It's just really hard to have that much collective creative success over the course of an entire year. But there's got to be a medium somewhere in there, you know, like it can't just be, you know, either high quality or nothing. But yeah, I think in a lot of those shows, you know, when they were shooting Buffy, you know, yeah, like they could do whole episodes where they just shoot it all inside of a house or inside of the school or whatever. And same thing with Star Trek. Once you've built the sets that are basically like, let's just film them walking down the corridor, having a conversation. And then again, let's take them to 10 forward again. Let's take them to the bridge again, you know, and then you basically frame the episodes around that. You throw in a little light CGI of the Enterprise whizzing by, which they probably didn't reshoot a lot of. They just kind of recycled a lot of that, and you know, and you've got an episode you can knock out, right?
Yeah, Tim, I want you to watch an old episode of like TNG or Deep Space Nine and pay attention to how, unlike in the modern era where if somebody says, hey, the Romulans are cloaking and leaving, they actually show it. There's a lot of times they don't show that. You just see like Worf,
they play or the sound effect.
Somebody in ops. Yeah, it's like, oh, they're leaving. Okay. No special effect, right.
Or the raising weapons, so you don't see your, yeah.
We're in modern era, is like, well, we have to show it. I'm like, well, maybe you don't. If it'll reduce your costs and speed it up, we kind of got away with it before.
Well, I mean, Star Trek was, I mean, the reason the transporter was invented was because of the special effects cost to make a ship land and have people get out of it. You know, like that's why they swirl that, you know, that pixie dust in a can of water to, you know, to create the transporter effect. That's exactly why that was written, was because of the brevity in terms of getting it out, right?
I'm sure they made the replicators for the same reason. They don't have to go down to the cafeteria anymore. They could just have a cup of tea appear in Picard's office, right?
Yeah. Well, still my favorite thing is the Heisenberg compensators. Those are the
most made-up thing brilliant. Ever.
Well, I mean, yeah, because all the physicists were like, you know, yelling and screaming as the transporter was beaming somebody down to a planet, and you know, how could they possibly know where every atom is, right? Well, they've used the Heisenberg compensators, right? Anyway, well, it moves us on to the main part of the show, and first of all, I'd like to say welcome to Exposition Week here at Spotcast, because we just had 2 amazing exposition episodes. Speaking of formulaic television. So we're going to talk about Agatha All Along, and we'll talk about the Penguin in a bit, but so we'll dig into Agatha All Along, Familiar by Thy Side, season 1, episode 6. Take it away.
Fire it up, homie.
Are we allowed to have spoilers? I guess everything here is spoilers, yeah. So my elevator pitch is, it was Billy Maximoff all along. It's kind of the point of this episode, right?
Yeah, I had... it's time for the bonerific origin story of Billy Kaplan / Maximoff. Yeah.
Yeah. Mine's enjoy the now, baby.
Yeah. And I mean, you're right, Tim. This was flashback week for our episodes. We kind of ended on that, for some people, shocking twist at the end of the previous episode, where we find out that Teen, the character that we had had this sort of mystery around that had this sigil that hid his identity actually was Scarlet Witch's son. And that left a lot of people scratching their heads saying, well, how is that possible? You know, even if you watched WandaVision and Doctor Doom in the Multiverse of Madness, or Doctor Strange, rather, in the Multiverse of Madness, how is it possible that Wanda's son is this person because of the age difference and everything else? So, yeah, so we just completely dive in here with, you know, the backstory of young Billy Kaplan and obviously suffering this tragic accident at the same time that this this phenomena that Scarlet Witch created in Westview is dissolved. And, you know, the idea that he was essentially a wandering soul that found a body is a really interesting one. And yeah.
Oh, is that what it is?
I mean, like, at one point, that's what Agatha says to him later in the episode is, you know, you saw a body and you took it, right? Basically, like, the second that the real Billy was in the accident and died, because we hear his heart stop, and then...
Oh, I see.
So basically,
I see.
Okay, Billy, right. the real William Kaplan, after his bar mitzvah, is killed in this car accident. And the second that he dies, it happens to be at the moment when the souls are basically set free from the artificially created bodies in this artificial story that Wanda had created inside of Westview. And so this soul had nowhere to go, and it found this body that was just vacated a second ago, and poof, there it is.
That doesn't explain the sigil, though, because he gets the sigil. He's at his bar mitzvah where he goes into a tent and he meets
Lilia,
character Lilia, and she does a reading, and she pauses it a few times, but she's the one that puts the sigil on him, and then she senses something weird about him, but true to what Agatha was saying, even the witch who puts it on doesn't often know why, right?
Yeah,
because she walks out of the tent not knowing who was just in the tent.
Well, we've seen that multiple times over the first few episodes that Lilia seems to have these disassociated moments where she sort of goes into a trance and she sort of says things, right? Because here we see it where she goes into, William goes into this little tent that's set up as a fortune telling during his bar mitzvah. And Lilia sort of says, oh, your lifeline is broken in two. And then she has this moment where she sort of snaps and sort of stares off into the distance and says, the tower reversed, which is, I took that to mean a tower as in tower, like the card in tarot. So the tower indicates destruction or a crisis or something bad. And she says the tower reversed, so it would mean like basically like crisis averted or crisis avoided. And then when she's still in that state, he's like, well, I don't believe in any of this anyways, and gets up and leaves, but leaves his jacket behind. She then, while she's still in that dissociative state, writes the sigil and puts it into his pocket. And then we see him carrying it with him. And then we see, obviously, later in the episode, he breaks the sigil in his hand. And that's what breaks the spell. And he can say, I'm Billy Kaplan, I'm Billy Maximoff. Yeah, it was... it was good. I must admit, I'm most curious to hear the reaction from the two of you. Jaime, I'm curious, like, obviously, this was a mystery this building. I knew from very early on who this was going to be, just because it's such a big part of the comics culture and the lore for the last 15, 20 years, who Billy is and sort of the whole idea of Billy's soul and everything. So I kind of knew where they were going with that. So I tried not to get into it, but I'm curious how this turn worked for both of you. And I'm curious how, if you found this sort of digression into who he was satisfying ultimately.
Well, for me, you kind of told me who it was at the end of last week's podcast episode, right? So I kind of knew going into it, you know, that he's eventually going to be it. But it was interesting the way they kind of played the... I didn't catch the dual, the death and then the rebirth sort of idea, but, you know, and then the amnesia and things like that, right? So, but we do have an age for the guy now. He's got to be 13, right? So,
He's 16 now, because he was 13 when he died, right? And they say it's 3 years later.
Oh, so this is 3 years later? Okay. Now. Oh, okay. Well, the question is to Jaime.
Yeah, I mean, I I thought it was pretty reasonably tied into the WandaVision stuff, right? They had mentioned almost like it's like a natural disaster. Hey, we got to leave this bar mitzvah. Things are going on. And so it stands to reason that weird witchcraft stuff would happen from that proximity. Like you could see the hex dome when they were driving around. So having it be one Maximoff son is something that led me to my question, which was, what about the other one?
Where yeah, you go? And that's sort of the ultimate, you know, story here is you're sort of trying to figure out at the end of the last episode, you know, Teen obviously in revealing himself, you know, we see the connection. Agatha says, you're so much like your mother. And then we see Billy wearing the crown that is the Scarlet Witch. We see him gesturing very much in the way that Scarlet Witch uses her magic. And yeah, so it was going to be sort of, how is this, you know, how does this all make sense that way? But I thought this was interesting, but ultimately his, you know, his play, you know, and even Agatha sort of digs that out later in this episode, where she sort of says, you know, what does Billy Maximoff want with the road? Why would you come here? Do you want to bring your mother back to life? Like, what is your goal here? And then she's like, oh, no, wait, I remember there was two of you. You're looking for your brother. What is it? Toby? No, it's Tommy. And so, yeah, the ultimately there's a connection between Billy and Tommy. And he's trying to figure out, well, if I lived and made it out of this experience, did Tommy live? And if so, where's Tommy now? So that's kind of the big underlying mystery that is sort of remaining, is not obviously not only can they get to the end of the road, what's going to happen with Agatha and everything else, but are we going to sort of find out what happened to Tommy and where does that story take us? And the best part of this episode for me was, as we're doing this flashback and we're trying to sort of piece together all these different parts, we sort of touch back on the mystery of, you know, what does the world know or understand about Wanda and what happened at Westview? What do they understand about witches in general? So we kind of go down a little bit of the rabbit hole on some of that stuff. The scene where we get Billy and his boyfriend going to meet with Bonerific 69. Ralph Boner from WandaVision reappears. Evan Peters. Amazing, could I just say, like, major shout outs to Evan Peters for being a great sport and coming back and reprising that role. Considering this man just won an Emmy Award, you know, like, he's legitimately becoming quite a famous, you know, Hollywood person, to come back for, like, you know, 7 or 8 minutes of being a crazy person and, you know, running around with this, you know, scrubby fake beard on was terrific. And
so was he meant to be, did he say he was Agatha?
He was supposed to be
in the fake universe.
He was supposed to be the husband. And then, but he also, Evan Peters, played Quicksilver in the X-Men films, so there was kind of this illusion that it could be that actually he was part of a multiverse thing and that he had come over, and so people were like all on these conspiracy theories about what it could all mean, and then it turns out that he wasn't meant to be you know, Pietro Maximoff. He was meant to be, you know, just this random dude. But I love that we explore, like, how messed up that situation was, that he is now, like, just an absolute crazy person, conspiracy theorist, everything, after going through all that experience with both Wanda and with Agatha. You know, they made me kill a dog. Like, it's just, it was so funny and so rewarding that he came back for just that little bit. It really made the episode for me that he was there, because it was just a nice way to tie the loop back around to WandaVision of, like, oh yeah, that was really messed up.
Yeah, the name there, I re-noticed the Agatha's t-shirt when she was still yep. hexed as a detective. The Boner family reunion, pitch a tent.
Yeah, it's funny that I really enjoyed that sequence you're referring to, Jaime, where we got the Billy's side view of that exchange, because we had seen it from Agatha's perspective in the first episode, where she sees it as, you know, she catches as this epic, you know, escape of this ninja across her roof and chases it down and gets hit by the car and then is into the interrogation room. And then we see it from Billy's point of view here in this episode. And Billy's like, you know, she's got a garden hose nozzle tucked into her belt. She's wearing the Boner Family Reunion t-shirt. And he's like, oh, you're inside of a spell and you are seeing things completely different than I am. And you're, what you hear when I speak is completely different. And that was really, I thought that was excellently done and highly, highly hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. The fact that she, the fantasy of being a cop was, yes, was all in, yes, her head.
And that, like, clearly she's just been, like, mostly in this house acting like a crazy person for 3 years is awesome.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Pew, pew, pew. This episode was a little bit light on the pew, 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 so that's what I had as my pew, 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 is the replay of that race, because it kind of was an action scene-ish, but it was, like, so funny when they're, like, you know, they both fall off the roof, they both get hurt, they're both, like, stumbling down the road, you know, she's, like, yelling at him like she's a cop, but she's, like, dressed like, you know, a disheveled, you know, homeless person or something. Mm-hmm. I thought, as far as your pew-pew, that was good for me. Did you guys have anything different on a pew-pew side?
No, I went with the car crash as being the closest thing I could think of live.
Yeah, yeah. It's a bit of a brief scene, though. I mean, all things being equal, I'm glad they didn't draw it out, frankly. But yeah. And this was an Easter egg bonanza. Like, there were so many different things, references, clips. As we sort of get to know who the real Billy Kaplan was, then we get to learn a little bit more about who, you know, Billy Maximov inside Billy Kaplan's body is. So, like, the way that they start with Billy's room when he's 13, and then you see it change by the time he's 16, the posters that are on the wall, there's lots of great Easter eggs in the posters. All these, I wrote down some of the ones that are on the wall when he's a little kid. We get to see Alice in Wonderland, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, The Black Cauldron, Bedknobs and Broomsticks. There's posters for Houdini. There's one in there that was great that was The Goofballs, which is clearly supposed to be The Goonies, but I don't know if they couldn't get the rights, but it's the same poster as The Goonies poster, and it just says The Goofballs. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on with that one. And then when they come back 3 years later, the posters have changed, but there's a similar theme. They're all very witchy, spooky stuff. So it's The Craft, it's Saw, it's Carrie. And, you know, we kind of get a sense of, like, same type of person, just different, right? And then when he's in the tent with Lilia, Billy makes a reference to Love the Tent, very early Argento vibes. Obviously, Dario Argento, the master of Italian master of horror. Nice tag up on that one. When Billy is looking on the internet and finds information about Agatha, you know, first, was she the Jolene in Dolly Parton's Jolene song? It was very funny. And then he goes on to Brujapedia, which was very funny. There is, in fact, not Brujapedia. I looked just to see if maybe somebody had made that. Bruja, of course, Jaime, Spanish for witch. And on that site, it references the fact that she was connected to the Hindenburg disaster and the Titanic sinking. And it also, it starts with an alphabetical list by first name of witches. And Agatha, of course, is high on the list, but she's not number one. So I looked up the names of all the other people who are on there. And one of the other people that's listed on there is Abigail Adams, who was one of the, that was John Adams' wife, one of the earliest first ladies of the United States, unless it's somebody else. But I thought that was a funny little thing to include there. Yeah, again, just Easter eggs galore in this one as we sort of go back and forth. And of course, then we tag up on the real stuff, which is, you know, Lorna was one of the people, Alice was one of the people who was there at the crash site.
She was a cop.
And then we see Jen in the YouTube preview video. Look at her pores. Like, that was really funny. And of course, we saw Lilia back at the bar mitzvah. So we see that all of their paths have intersected. They just don't know that they've intersected in that way, right?
Yeah. By the way, here on IMDb, it says that divination is forbidden by the Torah, so it would be rare that they would have that booth at a bar mitzvah.
Good tip. Now we know.
in case you ever have
that was about that. Honestly, that was one of my as I was watching this episode, I was finding myself thinking, you know, there are these trolls who have ruined the ratings for so many Marvel, Star Wars, other shows that have been on television that have been considered progressive, that have included characters who are, you know, queer or, you know, they're racially diverse or all these different things. And I was like, I have really been enjoying this series, but, and I knew from the comic books that Billy's Jewish, but I was like, are they going to go there? And they went there. I'm like, okay, so he's Jewish, he's queer, he's dating a black person. And I was like, and as a witch, I'm like, oh, surely there's going to be jerk trolls somewhere in the depths of America who are going to ruin this now. Because they didn't realize, you know, like, I don't know.
This is why we can't have any nice things.
Stay off the internet, trolls. Go away.
I was kind of curious because they mentioned Vision being dismantled, but it's a little unclear which one, because it's not clear what normal people know. Like, for example, what happened in WandaVision, some people seem to think, oh, it was an Avengers training scenario gone wrong, as the official, you know, cover up or whatever. So unclear to me if it's the original Vision, you know, dismantled body from Avengers Infinity War, or if it's the new rebuilt Vision.
Yeah, it seems like Agatha doesn't know about White Vision, it seems like, the sort of rebuilt Vision, because she seems to think, like, she's the one who infers that Vision's been taken apart.
It's mentioned before in this.
And it's worth mentioning, too. So the way that it was explained, the way they're doing the WandaVision, Agatha all along, as part of a trilogy. The third part will be called Vision Quest. It is coming to Disney Plus in the future. And that one will focus on Paul Bettany's Vision character in the aftermath of all this as well. So they're kind of treating these three shows as a trilogy. So I'm sure it'll make even more sense when it's all tied up with a bow.
So is Wanda Maximoff dead now?
Are any comic book / sci-fi movie characters dead?
No, you've mentioned that before. You've mentioned that before.
Honestly, she's as dead as long as they need her to be dead, and she'll be as alive as they need her to be if they need her to be alive. Like, there are no dead characters. I mean, they can bring back anybody whenever they want. That's how comics work. But for the purposes of us, in theory, Wanda killed herself in an effort to control herself and the powers and stuff at the end of Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. So theoretically, she is dead. Any other Easter eggs before we move on to quotes?
Not sure I have any.
All right. Let's kick off with some quotes. Do you have any, Jaime?
No, I just went with the t-shirt as the closest thing to a quote.
It's so funny, though.
Oh, I had that one quote there. I just said, enjoy the now, baby. It's the only thing that's certain.
Absolutely. I had that one too. I also had, I thought it was very funny when Billy brings his boyfriend back to his room to show the research and says, no distractions, please. I'm going to need you to cover those arms. That was a real moment. It didn't need to be anything more than that. I thought that was a very sweet way to show that they are in love. Ralph in the parking garage says, Agatha can keep my Bowflex. I'm never going back. Again, just highlighting the ridiculousness of the Ralph Boner character. And then the great speech I thought was from Agatha at the end, where she says, don't you dare feel guilty about your talent. You survived like witches have been doing for centuries. You saw an opportunity, an empty vessel, and you moved in. So you broke the rules. Big deal. That's what kept you alive. That's what makes you special. It's what makes you a witch. So that's where she's sort of tying the knot for us on, like Billy, the real William Kaplan, had died. There was this empty vessel, and the spirit of Billy Maximoff basically saw that and moved in, as it were.
There was like no glow. There was no aura or whatever to sort of tie it together.
I think the only thing that they tried to do, I think they were trying to be a little subtle about it, but like.
Well, they had the hard heart rates going down.
And it comes to a complete stop, and then you're supposed to be like, oh my God, Billy. And then you hear it start back up again. So I guess that's supposed to be the clue that that's what's happened.
And she did say that the soothsayer did say,
there's a break in your lifeline.
Your lifeline is broken. Yeah.
Yep.
So It's interesting that she chose the right hand. I always thought they read the left hand.
I don't know. My big question for this one was, so at the end of the episode, when we're done our flashback, we cut back to what theoretically is our present. We get now Billy talking and having this sort of, you know, real moment with Agatha on, like, Agatha pulls herself out of the swamp. And, you know, they have this scene together. And they're like, well, okay, let's move on. We both want to get to the end of the road. Let's go find the next trial. So are we supposed to assume at that point that Jen and Lilia did, in fact, just die?
Yeah, I thought so, too.
In which case,
too.
Is that not a really anticlimactic way to kill those characters? And
yeah, they kind of just ended up in the mud.
In the sort of quicksandy kind of swampy area there. It's a weird way for them to die. It's weird that they have died and there's still like three episodes to go on this show. And it's also weird because, obviously there are these connections between these characters. I sincerely doubt that everyone is authentically dead because that would just be a waste. I think we're going to come back around to people. The road isn't really death or something. Something is going to change. I have a tough time believing that they've just brought these characters in to have them killed, especially because it is Billy that kills them, essentially. You know, Billy uses the power, Billy taps in, and Billy kills these two. Like, it just doesn't seem to click with my goal is to get to the end of the road and get the ability to find my brother, but I murdered these two people. That just felt kind of weird. So, I don't know. Three more episodes. We've got one next week and then two the week after to sort of wrap up the finale right before Halloween. So, yeah, I'm curious to see if they can land this plane in a very satisfying way.
Now, a word from our sponsor.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue one last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly Stewart Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue one last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
Now, back to the show.
All right. Anyway, let's move on to the penguin. Penguin?
Oh, penguin. You have to say penguin.
Cumberbatch. Penguin. Yeah.
It's the Benedict Cumberbatch version. Yeah, season one, episode four, Chintani. Chintani, Italian toast, means may you live 100 years. Mm. But in this episode, used in a very sinister way. Elevator pitch?
I have two alternative titles for this. One is Casa del Drogo, or Drago. I'm not sure how to pronounce that one in Italian. It's kind of like a House of the Dragons kind of thing. And I also went with Hangman Begins.
Yeah. I had Sophia gets hung out to dry by her murderous daddy, and it's really forked up.
Yeah. Yeah. I question, is that, what's the name of the actor? Strong Jason? Did he play the mob boss in the Batman? He did not.
So in the Batman movie, it's John Turturro. Is it Jeremy Strong?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. He's a
British actor. He's in the Kingsman stuff. I'll look here.
It was a good show. He was on for a season and they didn't renew it, which is really good.
He was the bad guy in Kick-Ass and a few other things. I think he's a terrific actor. I think he's really great. That being said, I can't remember his name, but anyways, yeah, it was Jeremy Strong's a different person. He's the guy from Kendall. Okay. Anyways, it was basically trying to show this character as a younger person, but I honestly, I like John Turturro, but I actually thought he was a little bit hammy in the Batman movie and actually kind of liked this version of the character a little bit better. It was really messed up. So again, another flashback episode, right? We got to take a look back at, we had spoken previously about, I wonder what the backstory is. I wonder what the whole Hangman thing is about. I wonder if they're going to tie it into some of this comics lore, how this is going to fit together. And here we get this sort of epic backstory of a very different version of Sophia, sort of ends up falling down this rabbit hole. I mean, she has to know that her dad is a mobster, but I don't think she thinks he's a serial killer. And when she falls down this rabbit hole of realizing that, all of these women had been basically murdered in the same fashion, and then it also tied back to the way her mother was killed, and then you're like, oh wow, this is messed up. And then her dad ends up basically framing her and sending her to Arkham, and her family is all in on it. They all basically do what they're told because her dad is obviously the crime boss of Gotham, and it's messed. That sort of twist of going from this sort of young sort of rising star even in her dad's eyes to ostracized, cut off, isolated, dehumanized, violated, and abandoned, and to sort of watch her sort of descent into madness, and then to have the episode sort of pivot once you get her backstory into how is she going to sort of reclaim her power in this moment, and then to see her sort of rise phoenix like at the end of the episode in that beautiful yellow dress, this was a freaking good episode of television. This was, I have been a fan for a long time, but I was blown away by the performances in this episode. This was really, I thought episode three was really good, the sort of look into Vic and his backstory, because it was also a flashback episode. We had a real strong episode about, am I part of this life? What am I willing to do? What, all these different things. And then to go to this episode where we go backwards and we have this exploration of her backstory and what she's willing to do to be part of this world. I thought this was just masterful. And Kristen Milioti, I've been a fan, but I thought she was fantastic in Black Mirror. I thought she was fantastic in Palm Springs. I thought she was fantastic in How I Met Your Mother. I've seen her in doing lots of stuff and I've really dug it. But this blew me away. I was like, damn, this better get nominated for some awards or something, because she is fantastic in this episode. And yeah, I was just really blown away by this, her portrayal of this, just her betrayal and the confusion and the sadness when it first starts unraveling, and then turning that into just this paranoia and this anxiety, and then pivoting that into this, you know, just sort of twisted, dark turn that she takes towards the end of the episode, where she obviously, it sort of culminates with this basically mass, you know, family, you know, fratricide is messed. It's so messed, but it was so well done.
Yeah, she's like, yeah, the whole, I mean, it was, you know, I don't recommend going to jail after seeing, oof, you know, shows like this, right? Like even just for a short period of time, because that was the premise. Well, it'll only be 6 months, and then 6 months goes by and she's already had harrowing experience after harrowing experience.
Right? Well, and then as you go through it, you realize that she thought she could like endure 6 months of this hell, but she'd be fine. And then she realizes, she hears from Alberto. Alberto's like, you're not getting out. And you realize it's 10 years of her going through this. That's unbelievable. And again, just sort of go like the way that they play with, you know, her hair, her makeup, like the way she looks at the beginning of the episode, the way she looks in the middle of the episode, and the way she looks at the end of the episode being so contrasting. Again, just terrific, terrific television.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What do you think of the significance of the character named Magpie, the crazy, you know, the crazy woman that sits next to her?
Excellent at lunch? Question, Tim. Let's talk Easter eggs. Let's yeah, jump right ahead to the Easter eggs.
Yeah, okay.
So there are a couple of characters in here that are comic book characters, and there are a couple characters that are movie characters. So we saw Detective Kinsey shows up in this one. Kinsey was in the Batman movie as one of the sort of corrupt cops. So we know we've met that actor and that character before. Magpie is a character that has is from the comics and has appeared in a few different pieces of Batman related media. There was a Magpie character on the Gotham show. They've done Magpie in some of the cartoons that they've done. Magpie in the comics and in some of those other iterations is a thief and a killer, also a little unhinged. Here they play it more as somebody who is, you know, mentally unstable, obviously, but it is a character that we're supposed to recognize. I think it's sort of an Easter eggy kind of character, but also is just somebody who is clearly, you know, been tasked with pushing the buttons in order to get her supply, right? Because she wants the drugs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and the give yourself over to this, you know, this drug, because, you know, then this time here is passable, survivable, yeah, right? So, by the way, is Mark Strong the name of the actor?
Yeah. Again, love him. Great performer. Really enjoy his work. My pew 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 in this one, I was very tempted to get it when she snaps and kills the person in the cafeteria, but I just thought that the whole sequence at the end with the revenge where she, you know, she leaves the arboretum and she comes inside and she slips the mask on. She's walking around in that beautiful dress with the mask on and going room by room. That was just, it was a little, I mean, you could argue that it's not pew pew pewy, but oh my God, what a beautifully made sequence of television that was.
I went with a different sequence. It was a lot of stuff at Arkham, the electroshock therapies, the end it with the fork, with the other tied up lady. The speculum was an interesting choice, which is not a comfortable thing for ladies, for those who are unaware of that device.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned that earlier, that sort of the violation, the dehumanization, like that whole sequence, like it was just basically a masterclass in how to turn someone from a person into a thing. Like it was really well made, but dark as hell. Quotes. I had a couple of good ones. The part where I thought was really interesting, I flagged just because it really kind of spoke to the relationship between Oz and Sophia, is where she's in the car and Oz is trying to be like, hey, you know, you're going down a path here. You might want to take a different direction. And she says, Oz, stop talking. I don't need your advice. I don't care what you think. No one does. You're my driver and that's all you are. So stop talking and drive. That is the setup to him then going to her dad, and then that leading to this, to all this. It's such a weirdly, like, it's such a weird moment, because that was such a pivotal moment where she doesn't listen to Oz. she gets her back up about it, and it ends up blowing up in her face. And Oz was in his way trying to be like, you're gonna, you know, like you don't want to do this. You don't want to go down that path. And he was right, but also he was wrong. And basically what he told her dad ended up basically ruining her life. So yeah, I like that one. And then a couple of great quotes from Sophia. I don't know how to convince you I'm sane when you're already made up your mind about me. And then for 10 years, men have lied to me. And then I come home and it's all the same. They think I'm broken. I'm not broken. I'm not the one who's sick, and neither are you. The world is. Again, really well written, really well performed. Any other quotes jump out for you guys? I mean,
it was very quotable. I went with the, I told you I'm effing innocent.
Yeah. 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 I mean, the whole speech she gives when she is like at the dining table with her family, that whole speech she gives when she gets up and raises her glass and does that, like that whole speech was amazing. So yeah, that was really cool. So in the wake of this, obviously the only two people that survive this sort of massacre is her, I think, cousin, her little cousin that she saves, and Johnny Vitti. Johnny Vitti still somehow survives all this, even though he is just an absolute monster. I guess my question is, we're halfway through the season. It's an 8-episode season. This is episode 4, so we're halfway there. We've kind of gotten the backstories. We've kind of got the details out of the way. Are we looking at 4 episodes that are like mob war between Sophia's side and Oz's side? And if so, is that a good thing?
Yeah.
Wait, so where's the current... Like, she's still in the out, so where's she taking over now?
Well, she killed her uncle, and she basically killed all of her cousins and everybody else. So basically, the entire Falcone family.
But and she now knows that Oz was, or is accused of killing her brother, right?
That was the other weird part, because we saw that at the end of the previous episode where Oz is like, forget her, let's get out of here. And you're like, well, that's weird. And then here we find out that she now finds out that Oz is responsible for Alberto's death, right? So now we're looking at her in control of the Falcone mob, him allied with the Maronis, and gang war. I think this even ties back into my question from last week, which is, do you think Vic lives through the rest of the season?
Yeah. Or is the Batman going to swoop in and
who knows? And also his mom, right? Like we met, he lied to her in a previous episode and said, my mom and my brother are dead. My mom and my brothers are dead. But we know his mom is still alive. Is Sophia going to find out about the mom?
Who, yeah. Vic's mom?
No, not Vic's mom. Oz's mom.
Or
she's the one with dementia, Oz's mom, right?
Yeah, okay. So,
I have a bad feeling about Oz's mom. Yeah, that's my future call. I think Sophia's going to find out about the mom.
Yeah. Well, the question is, when does he get the top hat and start?
Hopefully never. I like this take on the character. And he's not Oswald Cobblepot. He's Oz Cobb, right? He's a sort of different take on this, a little more modern. And again, Oswald is supposed to have been like, also spoon in his mouth, raised rich kid in Gotham. Whereas Oz is supposed to be, a street kid who likes his Slurpees mixed. Question, anybody mix a Slurpee? Do you guys like mixed Slurpees?
I've mixed colas and stuff like that, but I've never really mixed Slurpees. Not a big Slurpee fan.
We lived down the street when I was a boy from a 7-Eleven, and so Slurpees were part of the diet. Unfortunately, I'm probably done my insides no good from that, but drank a lot of Slurpees when I was a kid and really did enjoy the experience of mixing Slurpee flavors. I'm always deeply envious, because just like everything else in this world, I think our Slurpee machines had like 4 flavors. You go to the ones in the United States and they have like 16 flavors of Slurpees you could combine. I was always thought that was the really cool thing. But Jaime, you ever mix your Slurpees?
Yeah, definitely did that with the Slurpees and separately with the sodas. It's probably been a few years now since I've done that, though. Been too long, apparently.
Well, you're into your 40s now, Jaime. It's probably better you don't drink a lot of Slurpees.
Got to go big or go home, I guess. If I'm not going to drink them frequently, you got to mix them all together. Get all the flavors at once.
Yeah, absolutely. Watch list?
Yeah, let's move on to the watch list. I moved you guys around because I got a few things to talk about. Anyway, go ahead. Jaime, you're up first.
Yeah, the site Dookie Demastered.
I saw
Demastered,
this.
Not remastered, genius. Demastered. This is the old man territory. If it's been 30 years since the landmark album of Dookie was released for... from Green Day. And they have it. They have each song on all of these crazy things of like, here it is on a floppy disk. Hey, remember Teddy Ruxpin? Yeah. There's one on Teddy Ruxpin. There's a Game Boy cartridge. There's one of those Big Mouth Billy Bass. Fish trophy things, a wax cylinder, like as
the
if Fisher you were
going to... Fisher Price record is my... I had that little Fisher Price record player when I was a kid. That was the one I thought was like, that is an absolute deep cut. That was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mini disc.
Did they do every song on the album in this way, or is it just
in the video? I think only what I saw was basically one song per device, but maybe they are. I don't know. Yeah, good.
Even the site itself is interesting. Like if you start on the page and you see the image asset for the Dookie logo, and then as you scroll down, it pixelates like it was a crappy old version. You know, from like the 90s kind of thing. It's kind of interesting, even just the site itself.
Yeah.
Oh, the heavy compression.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Heavy compression. Like the JPEGs gets crappy, yeah. You know, like I'm like, wow, that's kind of neat.
Yeah, I thought this was a brilliant way to mark the anniversary and put that stuff out there. The one on the Game Boy, I loved it. As soon as I heard it kick in, I was like, oh, I am there. That little tinny sounding speaker.
Is this from the band or who did this?
I think it's official from the band or a product of Brain X. Oh wait, Brain Cross Brain. A product of Brain Cross Green Day. Brain.wtf, a very serious art studio based in Los Angeles, California.
Cool. Yes, highly advise people check that out. It's very funny.
Link in the show notes.
I have a couple things for us this week. I watched the first episode of the Tomb Raider, The Legend of Lara Croft series, the cartoon that dropped on Netflix. And I wasn't sure. I'm a casual Tomb Raider fan. I know, Tim, you were a big fan and played all the games. I played a bunch of them, but not all of them. I wasn't sure what to expect from this one. It's sort of spun a little bit out of the more recent iterations of Lara Croft. I'm not going to watch anymore. It didn't catch my interest at all. I honestly felt like in a world where we've kind of been spoiled by a lot of high quality animation, I thought the animation quality was not high. I love Hayley Atwell. I have season tickets to Hayley Atwell. I will watch her do a lot of different things. Her voice work on it is good. But they were introducing like random side characters and these sort of very thin relationships, kind of cheesy plot stuff. Again, maybe I'm just not the right demographic for it, but it did very little for me, and I'm disappointed just because obviously you want all these endeavors to be successful, but it just it wasn't enough for me to be like, I thought maybe, oh, I'll just watch this whole series this week because it's only a handful of episodes or whatever, but I was just like, nah, I can't do it. It's just the first one was not great. So your mileage may vary. If you're a Tomb Raider fan, you might dig it, but it was not for me. The other thing I had was Family Guy put out a Halloween episode this week, but particularly interesting, this was put out as a Hulu/Disney+ exclusive. So I don't know if this is because of the baseball playoffs are on Fox or football, or I don't know what else. Sometimes they can't get these holiday episodes in around the window of other things that they want to broadcast. But I sat down and turned on my Disney Plus the other day and it said exclusive episode. So I looked it up and this year's Family Guy Halloween episode is exclusive. In the United States, it's a Hulu thing. Here, it's a Disney Plus thing because we have that all sort of amalgamated. So I sat down and watched the episode. It's a good episode. Like, I enjoy Family Guy. It made me laugh. There was, you know, usual Family Guy silliness and grossness and everything else. But I just thought it was really interesting to note that that's an exclusive piece of content. So we're talking about something that has been a staple of television, cable television, for 25 years.
Like a Family Guy or the Halloween version?
Family Guy,
Halloween.
Just Family Guy in general. Okay, yeah, okay. You know, this is really interesting that now this is like, online exclusive, behind the paywall kind of content. And again, it's not like it's a Halloween episode, but it's more or less, it's just an episode of Family Guy. And I was like, that's really interesting that's going that way. I wonder if we'll see more. You know, we've seen these little like shorts that they've done for The Simpsons. We've seen these little 5-minute shorts they've done that are tied to Marvel, Disney, whatever products and stuff like that. But we've never seen like just a whole produced episode that is just going to one of these things. So, yeah, I wanted to mark that was an interesting development that just bears monitoring.
Interesting. Yeah, well, The Simpsons also, they had a Sideshow Bob. I saw that, one. Yeah. But I was wondering, like you said, it was like 5
They've
minutes long.
They've done probably right? At least a half a dozen of those.
Yeah, the Treehouse of Horrors, right?
Yeah, they did one where it's like, they did one around Star Wars, they did one around Marvel. Right. They've done lots of these little sort of mini-sodes and stuff like that. But like I say, the Family Guy one, I thought was interesting because it to me, it just felt like an episode of Family Guy. Obviously, it's timely. I wasn't sure if it was like, well, we can't get this out until November. It'll be stupid to put it in November. We'll use it here as exclusive content. I just thought it was really interesting that, you know, if you are a fan of this and you're used to watching it on Sunday nights on Fox, you aren't doing that anymore.
Oh, I see. Okay, right. Cool. And it was a Solar Opposites. They did the same thing last year. They had one more episode. So for those of you who didn't get enough Solar Opposites, or are you into Halloween, check that one out too. Cool. All right. Well, I forgot last week to mention Submerged came out, which is Apple's first made for Vision Pro feature, right? Featurette, I guess. It's not very long. It's probably, I forget how long it is, but this was filmed. It's basically the plot is, you know, you're following a couple of sailors in World War II in a submarine that gets depth charges or whatever and starts to sink and whatever, but it's all filmed to be watched on the Vision Pro, right? So it's all immersive. Apple has a special format for immersive video. They've done some of the Explorer episodes. They've done one with rhinoceroses, one with elephants. This is a produced, you know, plot with special effects and all that kind of stuff. And if you're claustrophobic, you might not like this episode. But yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, obviously we're all talking about it in the tech world. But again, super small audience because, you know, there's only, 400,000 Vision Pros worldwide to be able to watch this, right? So kind of interesting thing. And there's a making of, they announced called a Black Magic camera, special camera that was made for Apple to shoot this stuff. They did a Super Bowl short video film. They did, there's one apparently coming out for NBA as well soon, where it's like, you know, a little 5-minute long episode. They did one on hot air balloons, but this is the first sort of produced, you know, story, you know, little mini story episode kind of thing, you know, fictionalized thing, but it's completely immersive. And I'm telling you, it's like, you're right there in there with the guy. It was what I was talking about some of my other friends who have Vision Pros as well. There's one episode one scene in it where you're following this guy down a hallway as he's trying to find this mystery thing that he's trying to solve. But his head's too big, you know, like you're too close to him, right? So because my friend Oliver said if he was life size, it would be more immersive if you think about it that way, right? So rather than you being like a little Ant-Man on his shoulder kind of deal, right? So it's kind of cool. So yeah, so check it out, Submerged. I've got a link here in the show notes to the official trailer and the making of, which they talk about, you know, the cameras and lighting and building the sets and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of cool. And then just following up on Vision Pro, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I was going to go through some of the 3D movies that are available. A couple more came out. I think the Bad Robot, a movie that was at TIFF, is now available for rent and purchase on Vision Pro, or in 3D, I should say, available for Vision Pro. Not, it's funny, like Wolverine came out, you know, Wolverine and Deadpool came out, but it's not available in 3D. I kind of scratched my head as to why, because you and I saw that in 3D, didn't we, John? Did. Yeah, I don't know why these studios are making these things, especially if they're connected to Disney, and they're not made in 3D for Vision Pro. I just shake my head. Anyway, so I've been going through the Ant-Man movie. I don't know if it's goofy or not. I mean, I think you sort of said the first two Ant-Man movies weren't great.
Well, no, actually, the first one is great. The second two, not so much.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm in the middle of the second one, and I think maybe the 3D does make a difference, but because the first movie I enjoyed that one. The second one, I guess it's kind of plot holes in the second one, maybe was the problem, right? Because there are some significant holes in here, but but it's funny. It's got, you know, the ant wearing the ankle bracelet and all that kind of stuff. And again, I get that Lucy feeling where, you know, he's supposed to be home for, like, he's only got three more days left on his what do you call it when you're locked up from home with an ankle bracelet? home arrest, I guess, right?
Right.
And of course, you know, they've dragged him out to go on their adventures. And, you know, I get that, oh my God, the cops are going to come and catch him and he's going to be, you know, away from the house. And those kind of things drive me crazy. And then just a couple of other movies I watched. I watched Super 65, which I can save you a lot of time. Never watched this movie.
Adam Driver in the past.
Yeah. It showed up on my radar and I went, oh yeah, I wanted to watch that. So I sat down and watched it. You know, we've had some life altering events in the last couple of weeks. So I just needed I needed a popcorn movie. I mean, it's good, but it's so derivative. And apparently takes place 65 million years ago and there's a comet coming towards the Earth and they have to get off the planet before the comet hits. I mean, okay, seriously? No. Like Hollywoodized that whole event, right? And then I was talking to Jaime and Jonathan before we started recording. I watched Wolfs, which is the buddy movie with Brad Pitt and George Clooney. Interesting, again, popcorn-ish, funny, but it's very derivative of every buddy movie you've ever seen kind of thing, mm-hmm. including the end. The spoilers for the end is Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, so that's all I'm going to say about that. Those are my things I watched this week, and I'm sure I watched other things, but that's all I've got on this list here today. So until next time, I guess that's it for whatever. And Jonathan, how do people get in touch with you?
You can always find me on the Twitter and the Instagram is at JPK News or on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
All right. And how many people get in touch with you?
I'm on Twitter is at Dev of the Hair.
Of course you are. My name is Timitra, TimMitra is my handle on most of the social things. So Mastodon, Blue Sky. Threads, spending a lot of time on Threads these days. So yeah, and that other place, but only because I have to be. But till next time, we'll see you in the future.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
Next week, the only thing to consider is that next week is the 2-episode season premiere of Lower Decks.
Yeah, so what, Lower Decks?
Yeah, they're next doing week? A 2-episode premiere of Lower Decks, which actually I was trying to figure out. I was like, why are they doing 2 episodes? I'm like, is it like, are they going to do something that sort of hooks in? And I was like, oh, you know why they're doing that? Because if they don't do that, then the final episode would be coming out on Boxing Day. So they're doing 2 to first start, and then they're doing the rest in order after that. And that takes us up to December the 19th is the final episode. So
and we have 2 Agathas next week?
No, next week's 1 Agatha. The week after is 2. So
we have Agatha Penguin, Lower Decks, and what else?
Well, there would be... So next week, there would be... Next week is two Lower Decks, one Agatha.
Oh, you're saying including the week after.
One Penguin. Yeah. That's four episodes. And the week after is two more Agathas and a Lower Decks.
So it'd be three
and
Lower Decks.
So actually, I think it's eight episodes we'd have to talk about, which is a lot. So we'd have to figure out how we want to pair or parse or do that. Or again, we could do back-to-back episodes or I don't know what. But we just that sounds like a lot to do in one episode. Or we just skip the headlines that week and just do shows or I don't know, something.
Well, that one episode where I put together the whole Picard season didn't go over very well. I mean,
it's there if people want it, but it's a lot. That, or again, we can do, you know, we can break it up however we want. We could do one that focuses on one show and like one on the Trek and one on the others or whatever. Anyways, there's ways to do it. We just have to figure out what makes sense from you for an editing perspective and obviously all of us for time. You know, we could just basically put a timer on and be like, we cannot spend more than 8 minutes talking about any given episode.
Well, I think in the past I've done, I think the first time we've had a super long More Than Just Code, I just did it as two episodes.
Yeah, I mean, again, we could approach it from that way as well.
But I've never, but then it never went over well, so.
Options abound. We'll have to figure it out.
What else is exciting? Is there baseball happening now?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, do you watch playoff baseball when your team is not involved?
Here and there. So some of the Padres. Wait a minute.
How about that new coach on the Seattle Kraken?
Yes. Female coach, first female assistant coach in the NHL.
Yeah, it's a thing that like barriers are being broken down, right? NFL has seen GM staff at the very least, and certainly folks. I don't think a head umpire, but you know, linesmen, people, ref. I don't know what to call people now.
Linespersons.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely seeing in the NBA there are female referees and have been for a while. And there was a associate coach in San Antonio for a couple of years who was a woman who had previously coached in women's college and WNBA. So yeah, it's nice to see some of these walls coming down.
Yeah. Sorry, you were talking about baseball.
Yeah. I they're down to the championship series. There's only four teams left. To me, it seems like it's a ridiculous fait accompli that it's going to be the Dodgers and the Yankees. And I can't think of two teams that are more emblematic of what's wrong with baseball than the Yankees and the Dodgers. So I got to admit, I could not give.
Are those New York
Dodgers
teams?
Are Los Angeles.
Oh, the old Brooklyn
yeah,
Dodgers.
And then right? Of course yeah. The Yankees. But I mean, so great. So the two teams that spend the most and that attract the best people because they're in the biggest cities are going to play for the championship. I'm sure in some way that's good for baseball because there's lots of people in those cities and they want to make them fans. But for those of us who aren't in those cities, this is why baseball needs a salary cap because it's absurd. Like the American League Championship Series right now, the Cleveland Guardians, formerly Indians, have a salary of $108 million for their entire roster. And the Yankees is, I think, $400+ million. It's a joke. It's a joke. Baseball is a joke. I find the lack of any inhibition on spending to be extremely problematic because essentially every non-major market is just a feeder system for the big markets. And it has been that way for 40 years and there is no end in sight. And until they fix that, I can't imagine how you are supposed to care. You know, I went to a couple of Blue Jays games this year. It's nice to go to the ballpark and watch a game. But in the grand scheme of things, like, I have no illusions that they're ever going to be competitive when they have such an uneven playing field. All you can hope is that you hit the lottery on some of your prospects and it all works out, which is a dumb way to be a fan. That being said,
wasn't there a movie about that called Moneyball?
I mean, Moneyball worked when somebody was using it for a small market, but then when everybody started using it, so I mean, that's how.
Oh, yeah, did like, all use
Moneyball,
it?
Okay. The coda to the movie Moneyball is, you know, the very next year the Boston Red Sox used the same principles of Moneyball in combination with having more money and won the World Series and then won it four times in the last, you know, 15 years. You know, of course they did that. Of course they can do that because it, you know, Moneyball is a very sound strategy. And when combined with money, you can still outbid places and it leads to garbage franchises like the Oakland A's who can't compete because they don't have the same financial sources that someplace like New York or Los Angeles does. And eventually they lose their team like they just did a few weeks ago. So I'm kind of ticked off with baseball right now. I just in case you couldn't tell, I'm frustrated because I used to love that sport. And now I just find like it's absurd how much money people are getting paid to be pretty mediocre, frankly. Like, I remember there was a player who played in Toronto. I'm sure Tim will remember Joe Carter. Joe Carter was the model of consistency. He hit 30 home runs and 100 RBIs for like 9 consecutive seasons. He was, you know, not a great on-base hitter. Like he only hit like 250, 260, but he did that in an era and he was considered like not even a chance of going to the Hall of Fame, not even a chance of being an all-time great when he was that consistent. And guys now are making like $50 million a year to be worse hitters than that. And salaries are out of control and ticket prices are out of control and everything else. It's just like, but this is so deeply flawed. Like it just makes no sense. And, you know, and it's just become this humongous business that, you know, and in a world where like, you know, I just don't know how they expect to continue to grow as a sport when it just becomes so isolating. If you're a fan in small markets, like I'm a Blue Jays fan and a casual Cincinnati Reds fan. I don't think the Reds will ever be competitive ever again, barring obviously growing up great players who they then can't afford, trading them to other teams for prospects, hoping those prospects work out. Like it's the only path to success and you can't sustain it. You basically have like a 2-year window to compete and then you have to basically burn it all down and start over again. It's just a brutal way to be a fan. I mean, do you agree or disagree with any of this?
I've always been a fan of having the NFL style hard cap where you literally can't pay more. There's no, you pay ever increasing amount of tax, like sin tax. Back
that's what basketball has too, right?
Your sins.
Yeah.
But also to avoid the small market problem, a pretty aggressive salary floor. So it's not too different from the salary maximum. So you keep people relatively close.
Yeah, no, that's what the NHL has. It has a hard cap. Like you cannot play a game if you are over the cap. You literally forfeit a game and every subsequent game if you're over the cap. So like it is a hard cap. And I think that is challenging because obviously, you know, you do get circumstances and it happens in other sports as well, where, you know, you unfortunately can't keep all. If you're a very smart ownership group and you have great leadership and you draft well and you get all these players, it means that sometimes you can't keep them all because you have to make choices because you have to fit under this cap. But it also means that the league ultimately is more balanced and competitive. I mean, that's what's worked in the NFL. It's what's worked in hockey to keep things fairly competitive because even the bad teams have to spend a certain amount. And even if you spend to the maximum, it doesn't mean you can retain all of your great players because if they want to make the maximum, you can't have that many maximum players. So it sort of changes things up. Although there are some people who argue that in those sports, it also drives up the middle class, right? You basically have like guys that make $100 million and guys that make $2 million and there's nobody in between. So I understand that point as well. But baseball is just deeply out of whack, like just crazy out of whack. No. All right. Should we call it a night?
Yes. Time to go and do other things.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, guys. We'll
stay in touch. Yeah.
Talk to you guys later.
All right. Okay. Take care, guys.
Bye.
All right.
Bye.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Save big on all your Halloween needs, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy red, green, or black seedless grapes for 99 cents a pound. Then get tender USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.